Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Did you watch or travel to the Penn State game last Saturday? Looking forward to the Eagles or Steelers games this weekend? Maybe one of your children's soccer games? It's tailgating season, and believe it or not, the weather will get cooler soon, and outdoor grilling will become indoor cooking. So, need ideas? Joining us today is Chef Donna Desfour. I do know your name. Chef Donna Desfour, host of WYTF Cooks TV shows, founder of There's a Chef in My Kitchen, and host of the podcast Now That's a Mouthful. Donna, welcome back to the program.
Always great to be here, Scott.
And we're also joined today by Sherry Krause, who is co-host of the Now That's a Mouthful podcast. Sherry, welcome to the show for the first time.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. It's nice to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, maybe an idea, something you'd like to add, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwytf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I have to admit, Donna, that it is hard to be thinking about making the transition from summer grilling to cool and colder weather, change of season, cooking back, getting back in the kitchen and cooking again, considering the heat outside, the rain, everything else that it's really kind of hard to picture right now.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody's going to be calling in and asking. When's the weather going to change? When am I going to come inside?
Yeah.
When am I going to go outside?
But tailgating is a big thing at this time of year. I just mentioned the Penn State game last year and the pro football season opened. So many parents and grandparents going to their kids' soccer games where there's tailgating, and it's a whole family atmosphere going on. So tailgating, what's your general overall view of tailgating and food?
Bacon. Okay.
So, I concur.
No. So, I mean, in a nutshell, that's really, you've just captured the whole essence of the diversity of tailgating. It's pro football. It's college football. It's family games. It's local sports. So every time you say tailgating, you really need to put it into context. You're either traveling really far and you have the capacity to do some really great food on a grill or pre-prepare some food and then heat it up. Or, you know, you just need some kind of snacky stuff that you can take and feed a small gaggle of children when they come off the soccer field or, you know, off the t-ball field.
Gaggle.
Gaggle of children. I love that.
All right. So what is your favorite? And let's say traveling the distance that you just outlined, your favorite menu for a tailgate?
Bacon.
All right. I know that's going to be part of it. But
So we're an Eagles fan. We're me and my husband. I have been converted. I am an Eagles fan, even though
Eagles.
I'm from Pittsburgh.
Wow.
And I am a Steelers fan. See
how well this is going to work.
Yeah, really.
But when we travel for Eagles game, you know, it really is, it's good, hearty food. Because once you get into the stadium, we really just want to watch the game. I mean, you know, we're there to cheer on the team, and I don't want to miss, you know, Nick Foles catching that touchdown pass because I'm not in my seat. So we tailgate, we get burgers, we get a great grill, we get some, you know, like maybe something that cooks up really quick, like shrimp. Or skewers, like chicken, threaded chicken skewers. Mm-hmm. Throw them all in a cooler, load them down with ice. Then we get there, we set up. We get a nice one of those little portable, you can actually buy the throwaway grills now. And everything's done. Everything's pre-prepared. Just throw it on the grill. Boom, you're done. And then, you know, just have some pre-mixed cocktails.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We do cocktails at our tailgates. That's bigger than bacon, I have to say. I'm really sorry about that. Bigger than bacon. And we take cornhole, we take our portable grill, and we take everything black and yellow, black and yellow.
All right. Well, okay. Well, that's the colors of the team. But
Steelers
when you first said black and yellow, I had to think about it for a second because I thought you were talking about food. But unless you're doing corn on the cob and some kind of Cajun thing, that for the most part, you're not doing black and yellow food.
We've done done some black and yellow Jello shots. We've done some black and yellow gummy bears infused with vodka and some wonderful other things. We love to take a large pot of chili, right on the grill, keep it nice and warm and all the condiments to go with it. But tailgating is a passion of everyone's, but especially that of Steeler Nation.
A couple things, Sherry. When I have to admit that chili is one of my favorites, but I also have to admit that the chili for me has to be a cooler weather, colder weather. In this kind of weather, I'm really not into chili. But there are so many different ways to make chili. Give us your favorite for tailgating with chili.
I love a white chicken chili. That's one of my very favorites, a little lighter than the heavy meat-based chili as far as ground beef and things. I also make a really great Boilermaker chili, which has lots of lean beef in it, like chunks and chunks of beef, lots of beans. I have a friend that absolutely disdains beans, so we have to make him a separate pot of chili, and he is also a Steeler fan. How many times am I allowed to say Steelers on this show?
Well,
I'll counter with Eagles every time. But what, you know, Sherry's really talking about is the lighter versions of chili. You know, chicken chili is a great way to start tailgating season. It's lighter. You know, you can get a nice crusty bread. You don't feel like that heavy, saucy, red sauce kind of chili, you know, filling you up. And then, you know, there's still room for other fun things. Like, I hate to say it, I rarely would take a fruit salad to a tailgate. But right now, when it's this hot, take your fruit and like peaches, watermelon, you can grill those. So, you know, you sort of get that smoky grill mark on it, and then you've got this luscious fall fruit that just is fantastic. And if you have one of those, like, really super-duper coolers and you can keep ice cream in there, slather, you know, your grilled fruit with a little ice cream.
And speaking of fruit, I love, love, love that you brought up watermelon, because one of our cookbooks that we did a review on is Sessions Cocktails.
And this is a mouthful. Now that that's a mouthful of
Sessions Cocktails. Go ahead. Wonderful book that talks about low volume alcohol cocktails, which keeps you on your feet throughout the tailgate and maybe halfway through the game, let's just say. But they have a wonderful recipe, and they're refreshing for this time of year, especially when we're heading into football season, called with a watermelon cooler. And it has a little bit of wonderful watermelon juice, Saint Germain liqueur, and agave syrup. It's delicious, light, refreshing, and it goes well with bacon.
Well, see, now when you're talking light and you're talking cool, I think more of watermelon than bacon, but still, you know, bacon can be used. Speaking of which, as if you've ever heard the program before when Chef Desfour has been on, you know that she always brings samples. Today,
not for the faint of heart.
No, not for the faint of heart, but there are several to choose from. But what did you bring today?
So I started with a bacon toffee. And then I made bacon blondies. So the reason these are so cool, remember last year when we were talking about the bacon Manhattan, we talked about clarifying bacon and using that to make the perfect Manhattan, which really did take the perfect Manhattan to a different level. So in that whole process, we had to learn how to clarify bacon. Well, lo and behold, guess what you can buy online today? Bacon, clarified bacon grease. So it makes something like bacon toffee, it makes something like bacon brownies or bacon blondies so much easier to make. You're just substituting out your fat, your oil with bacon grease. So when I say they're not for the faint of heart, they are not for the faint of heart. They are filling, but they taste just absolutely insanely delicious. So the bacon toffee is just crumbled bacon, and it's sitting on in the pan, you know, with just a light coating of bacon grease. And then you add the caramel toffee, which is just sugar and butter. And then you put Hershey's chocolate bars, let them melt in and swirl it around. Really super delicious. It's a great dessert. It's a great something great to munch on, you know, when it's hot and, you know, you're looking for something sweet. The bacon blondies, same thing. It's my mom's blondie recipe, and I just used bacon grease instead. Sorry, Mom. But so, you know, like this, I would take this to a tailgate with chili, and I would put my bacon blondie on my plate. I would put my my chili on top of my bacon blondie rather than cornbread, and just have at it. You get the sweet, the savory, the smoky. It's they're really good.
I sampled this morning, and I can attest to that. They are really good. You know, I was just thinking about this as the two of you were talking, that the biggest meals that we have throughout the year traditionally are around the holidays. Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, some of the other holidays. But other than those holidays, a tailgate may be the biggest food day of the year, unless you do it several times throughout the year, because just think of both of you, how you've described the amount of food, the amount of drinks, the amount of snacks, the desserts that you bring to these things. It's really a big deal.
A big coordination of efforts by everyone.
And I think the coordination really comes in. I think the stars of the show are the accessories, the condiments, the things that we bring to the pot of chili, the things that we bring mm-hmm. to the burgers, to, whatever the chicken breast or chicken strips that we're grilling. It's right now the tomatoes are insane.
Tomatoes are fantastic this
year.
Right,
a corn salad, like a cold corn salad mm-hmm. with, maybe a little cilantro, sun-dried tomatoes. It's actually a recipe that we're cooking right now with a podcast. Now that's a mouthful. But all of those condiments, the extra, the coordinated efforts, you bring the salad, you bring this, a really great bun for your burger. I mean, that's almost as good or better than the burger that you're going to put on it. So those pieces of the tailgate, you really sort of have to spend just a little bit more time. I mean, once you decide, okay, I'm having chili, chili's done. Once you decide I'm having a burger, mm-hmm. that's great. Once you say, okay, we're going to make hoagies, or we're going to pick up some cheesesteaks because we're at the Eagles game, then you just, you just really need to focus on what's coming together with that, because that's what's going to be the memorable piece.
Yeah, I'm picturing walking through a tailgate and the smells, the fragrances, the
aromas.
Just
aroma. Oh, we call it aroma. Okay, in the cooking world, it's aroma.
Well,
aroma.
See,
those rolling coolers as they go by, yeah. With the mystery meat that may be inside.
But all those things, that is one of the things I love the most. But also, and we talk about this a lot, presentation. I always enjoy seeing those tailgaters that have just gone beyond putting up a card table.
Right.
And
my favorite part. Love walking the aisles and watching.
But right. The presentation is I don't know. I think that's one of the keys,
too. Right.
Exactly.
So, every time we're walking it down the aisles, I just look at them and I'm like, wow, I really need to up my game. Because it's true. They have the tablecloths. They have flower arrangements. I mean, I've seen candelabras. I'm like, really? Mm-hmm. But, given the location, given, the context of where you're at, I mean, they have all these really cool pop-up tables, pop-up chairs.
Color-coordinated to your black and yellow team.
Right,
or your,
right.
Yeah, green and white.
Yeah, Iowa.
It just
yeah.
depends. So, but yeah, I mean, it all comes together. And really, we always say this, we feast first with our eyes. Beautiful
always.
Presentation, beautiful plating, beautiful looking food, and beautiful aromatic smelling food, you're already knocking it out of the park.
I want to talk about making that transition from the heat, from warm weather to cooler and eventually cold weather in just a moment. We'd like to hear from you too. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're taking a break from the hard news of the day, the week, the month. It's been going on for a long time, to talk about something that everyone enjoys. With Chef Donna Desfour, host of WITF Cooks TV shows, founder of There's a Chef in My Kitchen, and host of the podcast Now That's a Mouthful, and her co-host Sherry Krause is with us today as well. If you have an item you'd like to talk about or something you'd like to talk about at your favorite tailgate, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, before we get into the transition from hot weather to cool and eventually winter weather, back to school. Most children have gone back to school in the last 2 weeks, and I don't know, many parents will be packing those lunches or making after-school snacks. All right, so first of all, health is a big deal, but so is taste. There's a reason that so many kids are not buying lunch anymore because they don't like a lot of the healthy items that are there. They should, but they're not in many cases. So as you're packing those lunches, ideas that, number one, are healthy, nutritious, but at the same time, taste good.
Bacon.
Chocolate chip cookies.
Okay. So, no. So, in all honesty, it's been really long since I've been in a cafeteria lunchroom, so I don't really know what they serve. I think they are salad bars and all sorts of cool stuff like that.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah.
So, you know, really, if a kid's going to take lunch to school, it behooves you to really... just really give them something that's so yummy and makes them, you know, in that one moment, in that one bite, remember home. Because in a stressful day of school, and let's face it, school's pretty stressful right now, you know, that one bite, even if it's a sandwich and, you know, you have some leftover, maybe you had a roasted or a grilled chicken from the night before, slice that down thin, put that on some really nice bread. You know, if you have fresh garden tomatoes, you know, find out what that child really likes. And if they don't like condiments, or they don't like vegetables, or they don't like things, and, you know, then experiment with spices, right? Because a little bit of herbs or a little bit of, you know, maybe some dried tomato powder, or a little bit of garlic, or a little bit of onion, all that kind of, those spices, they lift up the flavor of the food that they're eating. So you just want to give them a little piece of your heart, your home, so that when they take in that bite, you know, it really does, it satisfies them, but it also fills them up and gives them nutrition. The other piece,
I think, is a really important thing, is that get those kids in the kitchen. Get those kids helping make those lunches. Help them feel empowered to make the decisions, what goes into their lunch. Let them start cooking and making those decisions at a young age. And it promotes good health through and through. Through proper diet, exercise, those kids will have a really long and healthy life.
What if they want the same thing every day?
Then make them the same thing every day. As long as they are eating something well-balanced and healthy, and they're making the decisions to do it, I think that empowers them. It gives them confidence and courage to go through and perhaps tweak things as they go. Suggestions such as adding a little of this, taking something away of that. It's great. I think that's a great idea.
And I think what Cherry said, too, I mean, half joking, the chocolate chip cookies, I think that's also another important piece. Because when you're done at the end of a meal, if you've had something that's savory and wholesome and nutritious, there's still a piece of you that's left unsatisfied. I mean, this is scientifically proven. If you eat, you know, all around your palate, you're still going to want something sweet. So rather than going to the vending machine, or rather than, you know, trying to, you know, get a, you know, quick sweet fix in, make a chocolate chip cookie.
Oh,
she's on a quest.
Yes. I'm on the quest for the holy grail of the chocolate chip cookie. I do have
I'm
to
with
tell
you, Sherry. I'm with you on
it's
that.
It's one of my most favorite things, and one of my favorite childhood memories was my grandmother, who today would have been her 110th birthday.
Oh, so cool.
So she was the queen of our chocolate chip cookies in our family, and she had a summer porch, and she would keep them in a tin. And I remember visiting her home and running straight back to that little summer porch after giving her a hug, of course, and just diving into her chocolate chip cookie tin. And I love them. So some of our recipes, several of our cookbooks that we're promoting this year at this season, are talking about chocolate chip cookies and varieties of making them. One had ancho chili powder in it. One described in a cookbook called Repertoire, where you're making them. This is sort of a homemade type of brown sugar chocolate chip cookie. Within the last minute of baking, you lift the sheet pan up and drop it an inch to flatten the cookie so you have a crisp edge. I mean, there are several varieties, but I am still on my quest to find the perfect chocolate chip cookie. And I think that's a great after-school treat for kids. They come home, you can either have them baking in the oven and they come home to that great smell, aroma, because that's exactly what we want. We want to make those memories. And think about that. What do you recall as a child when you were waking up either on Thanksgiving morning, the smell of that turkey in the oven?
Exactly.
Those memories are fabulous. So you have food memories, which is great to start with kids.
Curious, I'm a little bit off topic here, but chocolate chip cookies reminded me of this. What percentage of meals do the two of you have that include dessert?
100%.
I was going to say the same thing. Like every night, there's something sweet that follows the meal, even if it's just
immediately.
Always.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because over the weekend at a picnic, I heard my mother-in-law say, when I was growing up, we had dessert every single meal. And I thought about it. I thought, well, we didn't have every single meal. I had a snack a little bit later. But you have desserts almost every single meal.
Every single meal.
Yeah. But again, it goes back to, you know, you have that savory dish. You're done with your dinner and there's still a piece that's not satisfied. So you satisfy it.
You know, you make this sound so scientific at the same time.
Oh, there's a lot of scientific research behind it.
So this year, so on this season, second season of the podcast, Now That's a Mouthful, we're really finding out how much science is behind all of our cooking. And, you know, as you know, from last season, our recipe testers, we have a recipe testing community, and, you know, they're really, really sort of embracing this whole scientific, like, okay, these flavor combinations are weird, or why are we cooking it this way when I would naturally be inclined to cook it another way? You know, so we've got a lot of fun things going on over the podcast.
So talk a little bit about the podcast, you know, just so that everyone is reminded, because it's been, well, we haven't had any new episodes for a few months now.
Yeah. So you and I started this really cool podcast called Now That's a Mouthful. And we just relaunched the new website, nowthatsamouthful.com. And on that website, you'll find all sorts of interesting things that we're doing around the podcast. The podcasts from our first season together, 29 episodes are there. You can also download them from iTunes, Google Play, or Google Podcasts. You can ask Amazon's Alexa to play Now That's a Mouthful. But there's also all the recipes that we've been cooking. You can sign up to be a recipe tester. And really what this website, nowthatsamouthful.com, is doing, it's a place for everybody to gather. It's a place for everybody to start a conversation and be engaged around food. We're talking about our cooking experiences and the shared experience in the kitchen. So Sherry's joining me in the studio, and we're taking our testers' feedback. We're talking about the things that are important to them and the current topics of the day.
These conversations are amazing. I think the thing that, you know, the vehicle that Donna Marie has created and Chef Donna has created is just amazing, to hear how we all cook at home and share those experiences and learn from one another. And that's what I'm gathering from it. I am absolutely loving this.
Mm. All right. So I did want to talk about the transition. I've said this many times over the last few weeks. I hate to see summer end. I've heard so many people say the same thing. I hate to see summer end, but this summer, the weather has been so unpleasant for the past month and a half, between 95 degree temperatures and 2 inches of rain a day. But eventually it will become cooler, it will become colder, and we will be making that transition from thinking about, okay, the temperature outside is hot, what meal goes with that, keeps us from being too heavy and all that, to those cool weather, cold weather meals. How do you make that transition?
I think you just bring the outdoors in. I mean, everything that we're doing outside literally can come in. But now I think you have the added flexibility of wrapping in some of those thicker, richer, more savory sauces, tomato-based sauces, gravy-based sauces. You might choose thicker, more roast kinds of cuts of meat that are a little more robust, maybe like a little lamb, you know, rather than using chicken breasts on the grill, maybe you'll spatchcock a chicken and just broil it in your oven. That's fun.
Spatchcock.
I love spatchcocking. We can say that many times.
It almost sounds like a bad word. Now go ahead.
Cutting out the backbone, making a chicken flat so that it's evenly cooking, and it's just it's delicious. And Chef Donna's going to show you a little bit about that on her next
on her video. We have videos at the new website too. So you know, spatchcock. We just say spatchcock because we can say that, and we can say go Eagles in the same sentence.
Okay.
Well, or we can say go Steelers and talk about. Rose's Baking Basics, which is one of our very favorite new cookbooks that we've been reviewing. Rose Levy Baron.
You know, you guys keep talking about the Eagles, as I would say growing up, and the Stillers.
The Stillers.
You know, I'm gonna start asking for scouting reports here pretty soon this weekend.
Okay. I can give you them.
Okay, you have a cookbook here, Donna, that you want to make available to a listener.
Yeah. So we're looking for followers. We want you to go on to our Facebook page, Now That's a Mouthful, or go on to our Instagram page at Now That's a Mouthful. Like us, follow us, tag us, share us. And for everybody that does it today and tomorrow, we are going to give one random person this newly released cookbook called Rose's Baking Basics. We've cooked from it. Our recipe testers are cooking from it right now. And so far, the reviews that are coming in are pretty spectacular.
She's amazing. Absolutely an amazing woman.
Rose Levy Barenbaum.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Author of The Cake Bible, I see.
Yes.
Which I have baked from for many, many, many years. It was probably the very first cake that I ever baked for my in-laws. Came from her original
cake
Bible.
Okay, what was it?
A lemon poppy seed cake. It was absolutely delicious. Breakfast cake.
Talk about the recipe now.
Oh my gosh, it was
delicious.
You have to get it. I'm a lemon lover. Donna Marie knows that I love lemons. And anything that has lemons is refreshing and delicious. And it was in a beautiful fluted pan. And I was very nervous that my in-laws were coming for the very first time. And I made it. It was beautiful, exquisite, and very lemony. It's delicious.
How do you make it?
How do I make it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you squeeze lemons, you have poppy seeds, you do flour, sugar, butter, and you make it, and it's delicious, and it raises, and it's luscious.
See, you have to have confidence. Donna, you said earlier about experimenting on the kids with their lunches. I don't know whether the kids would like being experimented on.
Like my
in-laws.
You
try this with the in-laws.
Still married 33 years. Thank you.
Yeah. It was a good cake.
It must have been, I would say.
So like us on Facebook, like us on Instagram, share us, tag us, and maybe you'll be the one taking this cookbook home.
Mm-hmm. Chef Donna Desfour and Sherry Kraust, she's co-host of Now That's a Mouthful. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Always fun. So very much, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, it's a Smart Talk road trip to Martin's Library in downtown York to discuss York's revitalization. Really, the kind of things that you'll hear on the program could apply to almost any city in central Pennsylvania or really anywhere else as well, because there are so many cities out there that are remaking themselves. But we focus tomorrow morning on York in particular, from Martin Library in downtown York. If you'd like to stop out and see us, go to WITF.org/events and RSVP. By the way, 2018 marks a major milestone in the entrepreneur history of Harrisburg, the 100th anniversary of the opening of the legendary Mary Sachs Lady Shop. It was an enterprise that set new standards in fashion retailing while making downtown Harrisburg a shopping destination for some of America's best-dressed women. Now, that description is borrowed from a press release from Historic Harrisburg, but it says it very well. A centennial ceremony will be held tomorrow in Harrisburg to celebrate the opening of Mary Sachs stores September 6th, 1918. To talk about it today, this is a fascinating topic. David Morrison, Executive Director of Historic Harrisburg, Paul Hoke, Chairman of the Mary Sachs Charitable Trust, Jeb Stewart, Historic Harrisburg Preservation Advisor and Exhibit Curator, and William Greenberg, Chairman Emeritus of the Mary Sachs Charitable Trust. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On WITF's Twitter page, you can go to @SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, I have to tell you, David Morrison, you approached me about this several months ago. And as I read about it, I know, you know, our audience loves history. But the more I was reading about Mary Sachs, I, you know, didn't know a whole lot about it. But the more I was reading about Mary Sachs, I thought, what a person, what an outstanding entrepreneur and a pioneer, a fashion pioneer, a retail pioneer in central Pennsylvania and in Harrisburg. And also her charity, the trust that we'll be talking about as well. Who was Mary Sachs?
She was a immigrant from Russia, came to America at age 4 without resources, first lived in Steelton. Paul and Bill, by the way, are her great nephews, and they can tell more about Mary. But she was a shop girl, an employee in the clothing retail business, opened up her own store 100 years ago. Remarkable that somebody, that a woman, a single woman, could start a business and be so successful, be renowned, have such an impact on downtown Harrisburg. This was clearly the most successful and famous retail establishment in central Pennsylvania. And it changed Harrisburg. And then her success led to her own philanthropy and the charitable trust, which continues that today.
And by the way, I wanted to mention that, you know, some of the terms and the language we use is probably not what we would describe today, like the lady shop or a shop girl. But that was the language that was used. That was the description that was used back in the day from 1918 to 1960. So, you know, why was Mary Sachs, I mean, you described that she's a very unique person. But why was what she did unique in Harrisburg and spread beyond Harrisburg?
Well, she had additional branch stores in Lancaster and Reading. The store in Harrisburg grew to fill almost an entire city block, 22 departments. Paul was telling us earlier about all the different departments. So it started as a ladies' shop, but it became the equivalent of a downtown department store.
Mm-hmm. So, Paul and Bill, as David mentioned, you're great nephews of Mary Sachs, growing up knowing her, of course. And I think both of you worked in the store, right?
I worked there a little bit. Bill probably worked there more than I did. But I had fun when I worked there. And I wasn't an employee, so I could go in and do a little bit of this and
you
leave.
You took advantage of the situation,
yeah, right.
Didn't you?
I did.
Well, okay, so Bill and Paul, tell me about the shopping experience. And by the way, this is a good opportunity for those who shopped at Mary Sachs store growing up or maybe as an adult to call in, tell us about your experiences, what you liked about the store, 1-800-729-7532. But tell us about the experience, the shopping experience.
Well, first, Scott, you mentioned the language. And the word you used was fashion. She made a distinction between fashion and style. And fashion was something that was going to always be around, and style was those things that come and go. And she made a statement one time, if you had a coat that you bought that you couldn't wear for 4 years, you bought the wrong coat in the first place. So that was her merchandising theory, that fashion was things that would last. Hmm. Her sister, Hannah, had dresses that she had bought back in the 50s and 60s, and she still wore them, and she looked like she just bought them.
Hmm. So, Bill, one of the things that was unique about Mary Sachs' lady shop was that it became the center of fashion here in central Pennsylvania. People would travel for miles to Harrisburg, her store on 3rd Street, North 3rd Street. And, you know, it had fashions that you would see in New York or maybe Paris. And, you know, back in those days, those were the fashion capitals of the world. So to be able to see that here in central Pennsylvania and sell that kind of merchandise, I mean, that was noteworthy.
It really was. And I remember working in the store at least 2 summers. I grew up in New Jersey, and Mary Sachs, Aunt Mary to us was not only a myth, a legend, but I had the pleasure and honor of working with her toward the end of her life. But the store was unique in that every week she left on Monday afternoon with her sister Hannah for New York to bring back merchandise, and came back on Tuesday, worked the full 6 days, and Thursday nights was the store was open. And I think every year from the mid-20s on, probably into the early 50s, they made a trip to Paris. to get the finest and most current fashions. So she recognized also that there were a great number of women, and later in the 212 man's shop, men who had money and an interest in fashion and the finest quality of everything, whether it was the women's store, whether it was men's fashion, whether it was children's clothes, shoes, whatever, it was the highest quality, ultimately. I think the high water mark was probably the 1950s when every evening over 200 employees walked out of that store.
And by the way,
Yeah, sure.
I was going to say, by the way, we have some photographs that Jeb Stewart has supplied to us of the store on our website, WITF.org. Just love those old photographs. But Jeb wanted to mention this to you because your father, Alan Stewart, was a men's clothier and a business associate of Mary Sachs. How'd that come about?
After World War II, after my father served in the war, coming back, he had already been in the clothing business downtown. But after having coming back from the war, he and Mary knew one another. My dad already was establishing a reputation as a men's clothier, and Mary asked him to open the 212 shop in 1946, which was the men's division. And they had a very good relationship, very close. Dad did open it in 1946, and it stayed until 1950 when he moved on to open his own store on the ground floor of the Commerce Building at 2nd and Pine Streets.
Mm-hmm. So what did your father learn from Mary Sachs, or how did that relationship, how did it benefit both of them?
Well, Mary, of course, set the standard. My father was pretty much a protege of hers. His legacy was fine clothing. He had a following also, well beyond Harrisburg. I think he learned some traits from her in terms of not having the stock out for just people to thumb through, but to bring the stock out to, or a suit out to a customer who where he thought that would be the right fit for that customer. And it was just a high quality situation. I think he learned a lot from her from the standpoint of retailing and men's fashion as opposed to women's, of course.
You know, as you know, go ahead, Bill.
If I may, sorry. She had the same philosophy, and I'm glad Alan mentioned it, or Jeb mentioned it, that men and women were the same type of customer in the sense that she believed in showing merchandise and fitting it to the customer's desires or needs. As a young kid, teenager working in the store, I rarely went up to the women's part of the store, which was quite important. But her best customers basically had private showings of clothing for them. But if you were just a regular person off the street or a regular person looking at your front window in Reading or York or Lancaster, and you saw the famous Mary Sachs gray and scarlet truck delivering merchandise, that was all part of her theory of business. Show merchandise, somebody will like that particular dress or shirt or suit or whatever. So her employees were very well trained, and she was quite ahead of her time in what we would now call marketing or merchandising. And an important part of that was the expectation when you saw a gray and scarlet wrapping paper of a Mary Sachs gift, it was like getting something from Bergdorf's or Tiffany's today.
Hmm. You know, what you're describing here, it just sounds, it's so different today. This is a different time. And you also have mentioned quality several times. Right. And I have a listener here who commented and said, Mary Sachs was an expensive store in Harrisburg. And well, quality, you pay more for it sometimes. But she also mentions that Pomeroy's was another quality store in downtown Harrisburg. Wanted to bring that point up because Mary Sachs was a pioneer, but it did lead to other establishments. Jeb, you mentioned your father's mm-hmm. clothier, but it did lead to other stores in downtown Harrisburg and the other cities in the region that people love to shop.
Remember, Harrisburg, if I may, was the Commonwealth, the state capital of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania was quite an important place to be in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. I can well remember personally, there was the Hotel Harrisburger and the Penn Harris Hotel. When the state legislature was in session, there were enormous numbers of people who regularly focused on Harrisburg and shopping. I think Mary Sachs built one of the first, if not the first, parking garages that were attached to a store, the Pennsylvania Garage, which I think was next door on 3rd Street. But that was also an innovation to encourage people to come downtown and not have to worry about parking and so forth.
Jeb, downtown, talk about downtown, because this did lead to, and you can mention some of the names that of the businesses that probably will bring back a lot of memories for our listeners.
Well, sure. And Scott, the exhibit that we are
We'll talk about that first. Okay, so
that's good.
Tomorrow is centennial, September 6, 1918, and there's an exhibit that goes along with it. So what other activities?
And what I wanted to mention with respect to the exhibit is what other retailers we have focused on.
Okay.
And quite frankly, it is Harrisburg from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Is the emphasis. And of course, the Mary Sachs component is the flagship of the exhibit, but other retailers, in order to answer your question, that we are focusing on are such as Bowman's Department Store, Dive Pomeroy and Stewart, which was the predecessor of Pomeroy's, Goldsmith's Furniture, Krigo's, which was another men's store downtown, as well as Ratcliffe and Schwartz, Dowdrick's, Kaplan's on the Square, Troops, which was, of course, a music house that was well-known for many decades, and a couple of the 5 and 10s, like Murphy's and Kresge's and Woolworth's, as well as Cantor Shoes. And, of course, Cantor was a relation to Mary Sachs by virtue of Hannah, who was Hannah Cantor, who was Mary's sister, and also the Youth Center on Market Street. So we are focusing on other retailers just to try to build the climate of what Harrisburg was like in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s in particular.
David, I just long for those days. I mean, I know it's a time past, but before there were shopping malls, before there were suburban shopping centers, it was a family thing to go downtown. And I'm not just talking about Harrisburg. I didn't grow up in Harrisburg, but thinking about those, I mean, I see you, as we're having this conversation, I see you smiling and nodding your head because, as executive director of Historic Harrisburg, this is Harrisburg.
Absolutely. Harrisburg thrived in the 20th century, as did most downtowns. Harrisburg suffered in the late 20th century, as did most downtowns, for a variety of reasons. We're seeing things coming back now, and that's part of what we're trying to celebrate, is the fact that the pioneer spirit of a century ago is kind of reemerging in Harrisburg. There's some great new stores. There's some great businesses that are coming. It will probably never be like it was before the days of suburban malls and big box stores and online shopping. But we still hear from people who recall so fondly getting all dressed up to go downtown, having lunch at Pomeroy's and shopping at these stores. Of women wore white gloves and hats and totally different time period.
It is. It really is.
Yes, I remember as a kid, I couldn't go downtown unless I was in a coat and tie, period.
Really?
That's right.
I assume coming from your dad's store.
That's right.
I would hope so. Let's go to Christina in Bowmansdale. Christina, you're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. I don't know if you remember, but a very dear friend of my family, Bowman's of Bowmansdale, Marjorie Naylor Aiken, maybe, did the windows for Mary Sachs.
Oh, isn't that interesting? They were wonderful.
Do you remember
windows.
The name?
I don't remember. I think there are a lot of online activities that one can go to, and some of them show the windows, particularly the windows well lighted at night, are very striking.
Oh, yes.
Merchandising, showing merchandise, inviting people in by seeing what they saw in the windows. That was also, I think, a unique feature, or certainly one of the earliest examples of it.
Christina,
so glad to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the memory. Jim is in Harrisburg. Jim, you're on the air. Jim, listen to the telephone rather than the radio. Hey, Jim, are you there? Okay. Well, one of the things Jim wanted to mention, and Paul and Bill wanted to bring this up as well, I mentioned the Mary Sachs Charitable Trust, and you're part of that trust. Jim wanted to mention that she was a great philanthropist and put up money for Hidden Valley Boy Scout Camp, as well as many others, including some scholarships for fashion. Paul, talk about that.
That's right. We've talked a lot about her business, but she was a very, very generous person, and she said several times that what she enjoyed the most was giving what she had. And I can remember the first time I went to Boy Scout camp and saw that plaque on the wall that said it was provided by Mary Sachs. And I didn't know that before I went, so it was kind of thrilling. We at the Mary Sachs Charitable Trust have endowed about 12 or 14 scholarship endowments at colleges. And our new initiative is to provide high school seniors, female high school seniors, who are going to major in fashion, design, or business, a significant scholarship. And we've awarded about 8 of those so far. And one young woman has received it twice, again, as a sophomore. So it's been a very successful program, and we're proud of those women.
And Mary Sachs died in 1960, so yeah. this trust has been going on for some time. Bill, what did you want to say?
Well, I wanted to emphasize that the Mary Sachs Charitable Trust continues the philanthropy of Mary Sachs herself. She opened the store in September, and by October, she was already giving money to charities and encouraging others in Harrisburg. But the important thing about our trust is that we focus on the little colleges, the small colleges in central Pennsylvania, the Jewish community in Harrisburg and the area. And the thought is the big places like the University of Pennsylvania can take care of themselves, but it's the colleges in central Pennsylvania, Messiah College, Lebanon Valley, Ursinus, Franklin and Marshall, all have endowed scholarships from the Mary Sachs Trust over the years.
We only have about 90 seconds.
It should be remembered that Mary Sachs was an important early supporter of the State of Israel. And was very philanthropic in terms of establishing activities in Israel that people might otherwise overlook.
We only have about a minute or so left, and I want to thank the four of you for being with us today. Can't leave without talking about the activities, the celebration that is scheduled. David, Jeb, talk about what starting tomorrow.
Tomorrow at noon in Capitol Park, directly across 3rd Street from the Mary Sachs store, we're going to have a commemoration. So that'll be a brief ceremony at 12 noon. We have a big event tomorrow evening from 5 to 7:30 at Historic Harrisburg, 1230 North 3rd Street. That will be the opening reception for the new exhibit, which Jeb Stewart has created. We've talked about the content of that exhibit. It's a magnificent.
It really is.
Lots of great photography.
Photographs. It is fabulous.
Thank you, Scott.
We'll also be open Sunday for Gallery Walk, the same exhibit. And then on September 22nd, Jeb and I are leading a walking tour of Harrisburg's downtown retail landmarks.
So there's a lot going on around this, but I'm sure there are some younger listeners hearing the Mary Sachs name for the first time and are curious now and would like to participate and encourage that. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we have, we are going to be speaking revitalization of cities downtown York. We're going to be at Martin Library for a Smart Talk road trip talking about the revitalization of downtown York, including renovations to the Yorktown Hotel, something else that's been there for a long, long time.